This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio is Brian Ahare. He is a health information technology expert and president of Advanced Health Information Exchange Resources. Welcome, Brian. How are you?
Good. Thanks, John, for having me on.
Well, I just want to let everyone know that lots of meetings have taken place in the last couple weeks in Washington, D.C. about healthcare, and a lot of these meetings have been front page news. A lot of them have been, you know, fourth or fifth page news, maybe in the D section of the newspaper. And we want to have Brian come in to kind of give an expert's view of many different topics involving healthcare IT. But before we begin, some people are kind of scratching their heads wondering, why would I bring someone like you on the air, and what's your background, and where do you fit in this whole landscape of healthcare IT? Brian, tell us about your background, how you wound up in the position you're at, and why you're in town this week.
Well, I'm in town this week for the ONC's annual meeting, and so that's what brought me here. I've actually, you know, it's kind of an interesting story in some regard. The American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the stimulus package, was passed. And at the time, I was a city councilor in Oregon. And so I was interested in you know, maybe how we could leverage some of those funds to better our community. But I was also kind of irritated because everyone was talking about read the bill. We have to pass the bill to know what's in it and so forth. And nobody had read the bill. So we were going to the coast for our annual trip to Cannon Beach. And I decided instead of bringing a book with me, I'd read the bill. I actually could not read the entire thing.
And you live in Oregon, is that right?
I live in Oregon. Okay. And so, but I did get to the part called the High Tech Act. And when I read that, I worked at a hospital in the IS department, information systems. And when I read that, I knew that this was going to be pretty much a game changer, billions of dollars for implementation of health information technology and the EHR incentive program and the health information exchange cooperative agreement programs and funding for all these different things. So when I came back, I showed the folks at the hospital the bill, and we actually created a new position within the health system called the Health IT Evangelist. And then we started a 501c3 with another hospital and the public health department and a bunch of stakeholders in the area to form a health information exchange. So over the last 4 years, that's just been accelerating, starting
exploding.
Yeah, and so there's a great need, and I've kind of carved that out as the thing that I am most passionate about right now is using technology to improve our healthcare system. You know, all the debate about the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and how we're going to reform our healthcare system, about how we're going to pay for healthcare, very political. But what's bipartisan and not political is health information technology. The Office of National Coordinator was actually started by executive order by President Bush, President George W. Bush, and then continued under the current administration and actually now legislatively, you know, statutorily created under the High Tech Act.
And that's what the ONC conference is we just talked
about. And so this ONC is responsible really for health information technology, not healthcare.gov and building websites for health coverage, but health information exchange and electronic health records. And so making sure that physicians and healthcare providers have the right information at the right time at the point of care.
I think the listeners should know that you're very active on Twitter. You have over 20,000 followers. I thought you were three people because how can any one human do that many tweets in one day? 8 tweets, 10 tweets, plus run a business? Plus, I don't know, short order cook, tap dancer. I mean, it just, do you sleep or is it just something that you just drop out of your whole schedule?
No, I don't really get that much sleep. I get about 5 hours of sleep a night usually. And it's just, I seem to have a knack for Twitter. It may be my ADHD kicking in, right? I seem to have a knack for short bursts of information. I read a lot. And so what I find interesting, I tweet about. Actually, you know, and I've set up over the years, you know, RSS feeds and different ways of gathering information. And so that's sort of how I've fallen into that. But, you know, it's the ONC meeting really is winding down a lot of those programs from the High-Tech Act. So, for instance, the Regional Extension Center program just got extended for another year, and then that's done. The Health Information Exchange Cooperative Agreements is done. They're closing out those grants. A lot of those programs are winding down. But then at the same time, we've got what's called the EHR Incentive Program. This is where CMS, Medicare, pays extra money to hospitals and doctors for meaningful use of an electronic health record. So most people out there listening right now, if they go to their doctor, chances are their doctor's got a laptop now in the exam room and they're documenting things electronically. And this is a huge benefit to the health system. And something, it's actually something that, you know, Tom Daschle and Newt Gingrich can agree about. So it's a nice field to be in and to avoid some of all the political ramifications going on in healthcare right now.
What's interesting is that you did not start this process by majoring in political science at Harvard and coming down here and getting in someone's staff. You had boots on the ground working it, trying to figure it out and working your way up to understand it from, you know, a commercial setting instead of a policy setting. And it's just for someone like me, that's refreshing because, this guy's been on the streets and gotten beat up and knows what to do and what not to. It's an interesting perspective. That must be why so many people follow you.
Well, you know, it's helpful because you can bring a real life perspective, you know, someone who actually understands how it works in real clinical practice. It's not just theoretical. The big news, of course, at the annual meeting this week was that we now have a new national coordinator. The previous one, Dr. Farzad Mostashari, stepped down last year, and Dr. Karen DeSalvo from New Orleans is now the new national coordinator. And so this was sort of her coming out party, you know, her first public appearance. And she's also one that has practical experience. You know, she still has a clinical practice now. And so it's great to have her in that role and be able to look back as a physician who went through Katrina and saw how difficult it is to manage healthcare information using paper records. I mean, it's time for healthcare to get dragged into the 21st century. And it might be kicking and screaming, but we're dragging healthcare into the technology.
Yeah, when I think of Farzad, I think of a bow tie.
Yeah.
The first thing you think of, too. Does the new one, does she wear a bow tie, too?
No,
John,
she doesn't. Yep, the bow tie era has ended. Farzad is a great guy and did a really good job. And I expect Karen, after meeting her and talking to her yesterday, I'm expecting great things there as well. I think we're really in for the next decade of the ONC is going to be a good one.
So, Brian, your title is Health Information Technology Expert. So my question is, are you employed full-time by a hospital? Are you a consultant?
I actually left the hospital after 11 years last summer to open my own consulting practice. So that's what I'm doing now. And so I have some different engagements that I'm working on. One, primarily right now, what I'm really trying to do is facilitate the use of what's called direct. The Direct Project was something that was started a couple of years ago and has really taken hold now in building what Wes Rischel from Gartner calls the health internet. And I think that we've made some great progress, but we've got a lot of work to do. This year is going to be a big year for health IT. We've got ICD-10, which is a new diagnostic coding language that's going into effect in October. We've got stage 2 meaningful use, a whole lot of things around accountable care that requires IT components and patient-centered medical homes. There's all these new payment and care delivery models that are popping in, and all of this is IT-enabled. So there's a lot of overworked IT staffs that are really looking for solutions. this year.
When I think of Farzad, I think of that bow tie. But when I think of this concept of direct, I think of interoperability and standards and getting information back and forth and what horse to bet on. Paint us a picture about direct, where it fits in with this whole idea of interoperability.
Well, how it started was actually it was back in Anish Chopra was the chief technology officer of the United States back when Todd Park was with HHS. And a physician sort of complained publicly at a conference that he was not able to easily send and receive information with a colleague of his. He had a patient that was going to a new provider. And so being a tech-savvy doc, he knew how to export the medical record into a file, knew how to encrypt it, attach it to an email, and send it to his colleague who could then import it into their electronic medical record system. Clumsy, but it worked. Why can't we make that simpler? And so for healthcare, basically, direct is sort of a secure health email for sending and receiving messages.
Let's take a break and come back, talk more about direct, and talk about maybe interoperability in a local group called WEDI, W-E-D-I. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Brian Ahear. He is a health information technology expert and president of Advanced Health Information Exchange Resources. More information at ahier.net. Welcome back to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have the world famous Brian Ahear. He is a health information technology expert and president of Advanced Health Information Exchange Resources, well known around the United States for having a very sophisticated approach to health IT problems and a wide range of information, and very beneficial to follow his tweets at AHIER. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's my Twitter handle.
Before the break, we started talking about this silly thing called direct, and we were painting the picture. We had to go to the break. Talk a little bit more about direct and how this works with interoperability and standards and electronic health records, please.
So, you know, the whole idea really is for a physician or someone in a hospital to be able to, rather than send health information by fax, which is how most health information, even today, gets transmitted. They use fax machines in healthcare a lot. And the idea is that rather than send it by fax machine, since you're already on a computer, you know, for an example, my own life, I see a physician and then I go see a specialist and they want to send information back and forth. Guess what? Both of them have state-of-the-art electronic health record systems. So my doc prints out some records and then sticks it in a fax machine and sends it, you know, across copper wire, old-fashioned telephone system, to the fax machine. And if they didn't hit the wrong speed dial button and there's paper and ink in the fax machine, it'll print out on the other end, where they then scan it in as a blob of a document. It is a comedy show.
You could do a whole comedy routine on this.
It's just insane. So we're trying to fix that by this really secure email system for providers to be able to send information back and forth. Because then it could still just be a scanned document. It might be a PDF that they've extracted, but it might be what's called a continuity of care document or a consolidated CDA document. There's all these different standards for content in healthcare that we can now actually extract information and port it in. And the value of that is that, so for instance, if I've had lab work done, you know, they can import the record and it'll have all those old lab results so that they can trend the values over time and see how I'm doing. I could go on and on. There's a lot of benefit, obviously, to having a digital healthcare system as opposed to having paper records. You can't walk into a room full of paper records and pick out, well, let me see how I'm doing with my diabetic population. And, you know, it would take an extreme amount of manual work to pull all those charts for every diabetic and see how they're doing with their hemoglobin A1Cs. And then I want to know all the ones that have a hemoglobin A1C over 7. When was the last time they had a diabetic foot exam? And who do I need to see right away? But with the click of a mouse, you can run reports that will give you that information if you have a good electronic health record system. So to send information back and forth with structured content, with these discrete data elements, is really valuable and much more secure, actually, and better than the fax machine. One of the things that I think is really important is, as we've sort of digitized our healthcare system over the last few years, primarily as a result of the HITECH Act, we're starting to hear more and more about breaches of confidential patient health information. I don't necessarily think that that's because it's riskier to have electronic health information. It's because now we know whenever anybody accesses information. If a movie star goes into the hospital in Los Angeles, we know who's looked at his or her chart, right? My old life, 15 years ago, I was a medical records director at a long-term care facility, and we had paper charts, and oftentimes I would notice that nursing staff would be looking through charts that they were just curious and looking through charts.
And there's a breach, but now it's not known. Now
exactly.
Known,
yeah. And there's no way to know if the chart's sitting out on the table. You know, did the housekeeper walk by and look at her neighbor's chart or not? Who knows, right? Now we know everybody whose eyeballs are on the information, and it's actually more secure. We're just aware of the breaches, and so it makes a big splash.
You know, Brian, I've had all kinds of guests in the studio here. One was a character by the name of Dr. Louis Sullivan, who just knocked me out of this chair here. I couldn't believe what a guest he was. And he started this group called WEDI, and I'm sure they have a stand on direct. And they talk about many different things. In fact, in December, they had a announcement, 20-year anniversary, and they talked about four or five main concepts that they think are important in healthcare IT. And one of them is a patient engagement. I would think that electronic health records would increase this whole idea of patient engagement. Would you agree?
Absolutely. You know, two of the real focus points of this meaningful use of electronic health record program are health information exchange that we've talked a little bit about and patient engagement. So now actually providers will be giving the ability for patients to view online, to download, which you can use. Blue Button is a great new tool that's been developed for downloading your health information and or to transmit. They call it VDT, view, download, and transmit your own health information. And then last year, the new HIPAA rules that came out expanded the right to access and really clarified the right to access. You know, the HIPAA rules are all about privacy and security, but they're also all about patients' access to health
information. That's what most people don't know.
Exactly. There's a great Seinfeld clip that I tweeted it out once. I'll send it to you. It's hilarious, and Elaine is trying to get a copy of her chart, and it aired shortly after HIPAA passed. And I don't think that people realize that as a patient, they have the right to access their health information. You know, e-patient Dave likes to say, give me my damn data. Is that going to get bleeped? So, you know, that patient engagement, if we really want to bend the cost curve and improve care, having patients, empowered patients, as equal members of the care team, the nurse and the physician and the patient should all have access to the same information. And with an informed and engaged patient, you're going to really be able to make a difference.
I think that is the goal, I think, for physicians is to get the patient engaged rather than just have a passive patient. If a patient is engaged in their own cure, it's going to improve outcomes and reduce costs. I mean, this is a force multiplier, everything else. The WEDI folks also talked about payment models, and this is something that no one talks about. It's kind of swept under the rug, but I think it's an important concept here of innovating the way people are paying for their health care. And do you think has the ONC talked about that at all?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's one of their objectives, really, is to build out the IT infrastructure that's going to allow for some of these new innovative payment models. And, you know, a lot of people talk about the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and how that's going to change the way healthcare is. But actually, some of the most innovative concepts I've seen are coming out of the private market. Aetna and United Health Group and Cigna are building out these accountable care organizations, building out high-performing provider networks. And there's an IT infrastructure that enables you to succeed in that environment. So, you know, I would absolutely agree with WEDI's assessment. That report is really an excellent report. You know, one thing about WEDI that's really cool, too, is they're actually an advisor to Health and Human Services on privacy and security and health information technology. So their report carries a little bit of weight with it in that respect.
Yeah. It's WEDI.org. If you're listening, want to get more information on those folks, they're really good. You know, I look at this ONC conference and they do touch on all kinds of different important topics. Tell me about Karen and Karen DeSalva.
DeSalvo, yeah.
And her keynote speech and what kind of key points did she want to emphasize and push forward her with starting off?
Well, she started off really by saying, you know, she's more than just a cheerleader. And she was raised in Texas, and she has high regard for cheerleaders. But she's not just a cheerleader standing on the sidelines cheering us all on, but she's an active participant. She spoke quite a bit about her upbringing and her work down in Louisiana and New Orleans, particularly after Katrina. And, you know, she said a funny story about how, you know, in New Orleans, we were all in New Orleans for HIMSS last year. Most everybody that was at the annual meeting was also at the HIMSS conference in New Orleans and got the chance to see some of their graveyards there. And, you know, they bury their dead above ground because of flooding, but they keep their medical records underground.
So isn't that something?
Yeah. So after Katrina, and then it was very difficult to access any health information at all. And many of the patients now were being seen over in Texas and out in Florida. A lot of people fled. And so it was very difficult. And they learned a lot of valuable lessons there, and especially the value of health information technology and having a digital health system that you can access from you know, after an event like that. Superstorm Sandy up on the East Coast had some similar situations that arose. And those health systems that had good digital systems in place were able to survive.
Good to hear. Let's take a break and come back. We'll talk more about meaningful use, electronic health records, and a lot of different topics involved with healthcare IT. You're listening to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Brian Ahare. He is a health information technology expert. Welcome back to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we have Brian Ahare. He's the president of Advanced Health Information Exchange Resources. If you'd like more information, you can go to ahier.net. On the radio, that's kind of a hard word to spell, ahier.net. And before the break, we talked about the ONC conference downtown, and Karen DeSalvo is a new person down there. And tell me what else, anything exciting happened down there?
Oh, it was a blast. We had a lot of interesting sessions. I think one of the most important events that happened, sort of the underreported story probably, is Secretary Sebelius from the HHS came and gave a brief talk with Brian Sivak, the Chief Technology Officer of Health and Human Services. And online, on videos streaming, was Jeremy Hunt, who's the Secretary of Health, or the Minister of Health, I think they call it, in the UK. And they sat down, him at his table in London, and her up on the stage at the ONC annual meeting, and signed a new memorandum of understanding between our two nations around health information technology. It was interesting. Mr. Hunt said that while he feels like they may have made some advances, that the United States might be a little bit behind them in some respects, that we're actually seem to be ahead of them in other respects around health IT, in particular digitizing our healthcare system. So it was a pretty interesting discussion back and forth between the two secretaries.
I read a wide range of books, and I read a book by Malcolm Gladwell. He talked about the tipping point. Everyone knows about the tipping point and this Gladwell guy. So do you think the ARR, you think that was a tipping point? I think historians can look back at this and say, well, right around the aughts is when they really switched to digital, because someone had to kick them. Someone had to kick them in the butt and make them change.
Yeah, I think we're actually just now entering that tipping point. We may this year is the beginning of what's called stage two. Meaningful use is rolling out in stages, and we're at stage two now this year. And this is where we're really starting to see the broad adoption and meaningful use of electronic health records and health information technology. So I think we have reached that tipping point. You know, really, though, you know, just an incentive payment or a penalty from the government, it isn't going to move the needle. It's nudging the needle. But what's really going to move the needle is that there's value for what you're doing, that it impacts your bottom line. So, you know, forward-thinking health systems are realizing that they can actually improve the care and improve their financial picture by the smart use of technology. And so I think outside of the Meaningful Use Program, we're starting to see, as these we talked earlier about these innovative new payment and care delivery models that are cropping up, that there's an IT infrastructure that enables you to succeed in this new healthcare marketplace. And so that's going to really have a big impact.
You know, Brian, many of my listeners read blogs. I have a blog called Tech Tuesday Blog, and I'll be blogging about our interview. I'll ask you a leading question. Do you blog? Is there a blog you may suggest our listeners to read to keep up with these trends?
Well, of course, I suggest my blog at ahier.net. But, you know, I think one of the must-reads out there is called HisTalk. It's HisTalk.com. And they do a great job over there of keeping up. You know, some of the more detailed things are there, but also it's a simple, easy Monday morning read to find out what's going on. They just do a fantastic job. And then there's a whole bunch of great websites and blogs, and I usually tweet links to those. You know, actually, Twitter is microblogging. It's a sort of a way of blogging. And more, if you have a blog, using Twitter and being able to post links to the posts that you find interesting and good, or the ones that you write yourself, is almost a critical success, a key to success now.
Earlier in the interview, you talked about health information exchange, and perhaps some of our listeners got confused with other types of health exchanges. Tell us about, you know, the information exchange versus the insurance exchange, just for the sake of our listeners here,
well,
please.
Well, thank you for that, because, you know, people find out I'm in health information technology, and I'm coming to D.C., and they ask me, am I going to fix healthcare.gov? And I'm involved in what we call HIE. It's Health Information Exchange. That's called HIX, Health Insurance Exchange. It's a different animal. What I'm doing is working to try and make sure that providers and payers and patients can communicate with each other, right? That's health information exchange. So that if your pediatrician is sending your kid to go see a specialist, that they have that they can share that information to take better care of your kid, right? And if you for the insurance company, when they need information from the hospital system, that they're able to do that electronically instead of through fax. And then, as we talked about, patient engagement, for patients to be able to go online and access their own health information and send and receive messages to the care team. So that's the type of IT infrastructure that I'm working on. The insurance exchanges and is a completely different animal, and I don't actually really know that much about it.
You know, Brian, I've followed you for a long time, and I think your tweets are like desserts, and I think the main course is your blog.
Oh,
I think that's a good way to think of it, because I was reading your blog this morning, and you'll take a topic like mHealth and do a pretty nice little deep dive and give a couple of different links, and then turn around and a topic on electronic health records. And from my perspective, there's, you know, I may be interested in electronic health records. I may be interested in meaningful use, but, you know, by golly, mobile health is what I have to know about. And how should I manage these devices? What kind of security concerns should I have? Is Android of value? What about tablets? Should I format my stuff for a tablet? Do I format my stuff for a smartphone? I mean, just this mHealth, and you've written a blog about that, haven't you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's, you know, that's one of the areas we talked about, health information exchange and patient engagement. And my friend Leonard Kish has been widely quoted because Todd Park and others have picked up this meme of that patient engagement is the next blockbuster drug of this century. And I agree with that. But I think in some respects that this patient engagement is going to take mobile health technologies to really make it happen. Everyone's using smartphones and tablets, and if you want to engage with the healthcare consumer, then having a good mobile health strategy is going to help. You know, you mentioned Android and different devices, and, you know, a lot of people have iPhones. One thing that I think is interesting is the new Windows 8, and that Windows is making a play for this tablet market. And, you know, you think about physicians in the old days carried around a clipboard, and they're used to that. And most of the docs that I've worked with, they would like to have a tablet rather than a laptop in between them and the patient. Just real quickly, a pediatrician friend of mine, the kids would always draw pictures, crayon pictures of the doc, and she had them up on her wall. And the one that really impacted her was when the mom said, oh, here, you know, my daughter drew this picture of you. And it was a picture of a laptop screen with the doctor's eyes peering over the top of it. You know, we don't want the technology to get in between. We want it to enhance the patient relationship, not be a barrier between the physician and the patient.
No, I can't sing very well. My wife tells me I put the harm in harmony. So that's pretty bad. But when it comes to data and putting data, connecting together, there's something called data harmonization. I think that's a nice little phrase. It seems to me with different devices that are out there, mobile devices, smartphones, different operating system, Windows 8, it seems like this data harmonization has to be the forefront of discussion with the ONC folks as well.
Oh, sure. And normalization of data. So, you know, these data are not all in the same formats, right? And there's different vocabularies that we're trying to standardize on. But even still, depending on what system they come out of, they're going to look differently in another system. So the data has to be normalized. And we have to, you know, garbage in, garbage out, right? And we have to have not only quality data of, you know, about the quality of the care that we do, but also have to have quality data that the data itself are high quality. And so in order, that's sort of what this data harmonization and normalization of data is all about, is making sure that we have good data.
Yeah, it's, I think a couple years back, we had the folks from Mike Olson's company on the air. He talked about Hadoop and big data, but really, big data, so what? I mean, I could have the names of every single barber in the United States, and if I'm selling tap dancing shoes, who cares? I mean, big data is not the answer. I think good data might be the answer. I think this is really the whole concept here of what to collect and how to. Oh, you can collect it all. So what? I mean, can you make a decision based on that?
Big data, little data, we still need good data.
Yeah.
You know, this is where I think we're heading now in healthcare in this country. This is sort of my state of the union of health IT here. Today, and we have digitized our healthcare system to some degree. We are capturing data. We're starting to share data with interoperability and HIE. The next big thing really is data analytics.
Let's take a break on that fancy pants word, data analytics. That's going to impress somebody. You're listening to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Brian Ahare. He's the president of Advanced Health Information Exchange Resources. Welcome back to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Brian Ahare. He is a world-renowned expert in healthcare IT and president of Advanced Health Information Exchange Resources. For more information, ahier.net. Brian, before the break, we talked about all kinds of different things. Social media is very popular in this town. A gentleman like you has 20,000 followers on Twitter. Tell us about your social media experience in Twitter and why you use it so much.
Well, it's a really useful tool. It's just sort of one of the tools in our toolkit for social media. But certainly, you know, Twitter, LinkedIn, Google+, all three of them provide different avenues for disseminating information and gathering information. You know, I have my blog, so like you, I'll tweet links to my blog, but I'll also tweet links to your blog and other blogs I find interesting or newspaper stories. One of the things I do a lot with Twitter is when federal regulations are published, oftentimes they're put what's on called the public inspection desk before they're actually published in the Federal Register. And so I watch that very closely. And if there's anything related to health information technology, a regulation that's coming out, then I tweet a link to it. And
oh, people must love that.
People love it. You know, there's federal workers here in Washington, D.C. that say, yeah, I find out about it because of Brian's Twitter.
It's like the inside scoop on a football team. Oh, yeah, this guy's got an injured knee. Well, hey.
It's sort of a free service I try to provide because I'm finding the information for my own benefit and then figure I might as well share it. And that's the interesting thing, and sort of this community, this healthcare IT community that's built up around Twitter, and people really being able to share their expertise and their knowledge and links to interesting things.
Earlier, you talked about Brian Sivak, and he sat in that chair, and he took this special 10-question test to find out if he's a card-carrying nerd. And that's what we're going to give you. We're going to give you this test.
Uh-oh.
Then I'm going to run it through my UNIVAC computer in my basement, and we're going to find it exactly if you are a card-carrying nerd. So here's the 10 questions, Brian. First question is, so I break into your house tonight, how many desktops do I find in your house?
Let's see. Well, you'll find three in the storage room that are no longer used
anymore. That's the right answer. Yeah,
and then you'll find two in my office. I have one that has two monitors that's actually a real workstation, and then another just a PC with one monitor at my desk. So
how many cell phones have you purchased in the last year?
Two. One for my wife and one for myself. Okay. And, you know, I haven't, before that, for 11 years, I hadn't purchased any cell phones except for my wife's because I got one with work.
Oh.
So I didn't actually purchase it, but I used to get some pretty fancy phones.
And here's a question. Do you have a personal Twitter feed? Yes, we know that. At A-H-I-E-R. Twitter feed. And you have a personal blog. We know that. Do you use any online personal backup services?
Well, I had been using some, and now I've switched to my own, so I have a NAS set up in the
house. That's what security people would say, too. That's the right answer. What kind of smartphone do you have?
It's an Android device.
Okay.
My wife uses iPhone. I use Android. She has an iPad. I have a Windows 8 tablet, and now she just got a 7-inch Windows tablet. And I haven't I've used, but I don't quite own yet an Android tablet, so I'm thinking about that.
And number of apps you've used in a smartphone in the last 30 days.
That I've used on the smartphone. That's going to be, I'm going to have to say, this is a rough estimate, 25.
25, good.
25 to 30.
So I break into your house, and how many tablets do I count in your house? How many tablets got floating around there?
Well, let's see. The Joan's iPad, and then her 7-inch Dell, and then I have two tablets. So that's it, just four.
I used to ask if, now it's how many. Isn't it interesting how it's how many? It's funny. And what social networking sites you active in? We know LinkedIn.
Yep, LinkedIn and Twitter, obviously, and Google Plus. You know, the interesting thing with Google Plus and LinkedIn is that they're not confined to 140 characters. So on Twitter, sometimes I'll actually post a link to something I've written on Google Plus. And drive someone to my Google Plus page. I end up now with like 7,000 people have follow me on Google Plus. I don't use it all that much because I have my blog.
I do not use it that much, but when I do,
Google it's Plus. Important. Exactly. So the thing about Google Plus is, you know, it's a Google property, right? So it helps your SEO. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking to drive traffic, having a Google Plus page is important.
So Brian, the last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
Electronic.
Yeah. You have some pretty good brains. I'm going to have to find out exactly if you're a card-carrying nerd. But we'll let you know here the next time you come in for the State of the Union, perhaps next January.
There you go.
The ONC likes to talk about important topics and things that have happened. I think it's difficult to sit down and look out 4 or 5 years and say, well, what's going to happen in 3 or 4 years? Are we going to actually make the move to ICD-10? Are we actually make the move to electronic health records? Is someone going to put the meaning into meaningful use? Tell me what you see happening in the next 4 or 5 years in this world of healthcare IT, please.
You know, all those topics that you raised, I think, yes, we're going to do those. But I think the really we're going to see cloud technologies used much more in healthcare. CIOs and security experts in healthcare have been a little reticent, really, to dive into cloud technologies because it's a matter of control. And if I've got into my own data center, I feel a little more secure. But more and more, we're starting to see those barriers break down and the ability to have private clouds for healthcare. So I think healthcare in the clouds is going to be a trend that's going to continue, and as well as software as a service type of applications. The old client server model of technology in healthcare is going away. Those are the dinosaurs that are going away. So we're going to see, again, a lot of web-based applications and mobile. You know, you mentioned mobile health, and I think this is something that you think about this. 6-7 years ago, there were no iPhones. Nobody had a smartphone. Now, everywhere you go, everybody has a smartphone. You go somewhere and everyone's looking at their little screens, and this is starting to have an impact in healthcare. No one 6 years ago would have dreamed of where we are now with smartphone technology. And I think that as we look and the power of computing continues to grow, you know, Moore's law is still in effect, and we see computing power. I have more computing power in my pocket right now in my smartphone, far more than I had on my first computer back in the 80s. So I think we're looking at a future of healthcare IT that's sort of hard to read the tea leaves here, but that certainly cloud and mobile are going to play a big role. You mentioned big data, and I said earlier, and I think that when we really going to see the ROI on our health IT investment by the ability to do something now with these data, so that analytics and business intelligence tools are going to be key, and they'll be widely used in 2-3 years.
You tweeted out today something about the voice of the patient is growing. We talked earlier about patient engagement, but I can see that trend happening in the next 4 to 5 years. I mean, more and more patients are getting involved in their care. They're going to understand where their patient healthcare record is. I mean, I have three kids that are adults. They're going to expect it. It's not going to be maybe. They're going to expect it to have access to their healthcare record. And maybe that we see this trend of the voice of the patient growing.
Absolutely. You know, the consumerization of healthcare. And some of this will be driven by some of the new payment models that are in place. But I think a lot of it, as you said, is generational. And so there is going to be an expectation. There even is now starting to be an expectation that, you know, I should be able to log in and manage my healthcare online like I do with my bank. I wouldn't bank somewhere if they said, no, we don't have a website. You can't pay any bills online or do any of those services. We just expect that. And I think that that's starting to become a differentiator in healthcare services as well.
Security threats going to solve that problem?
You know, I don't know that we'll ever be able to completely solve it. But, you know, in healthcare, just like in other industries, in the financial services sector and manufacturing, it's a big concern. But I think that we're doing a pretty good job of staying one step ahead of the bad guys.
Jeremy Hunt was at the ONC conference through web connection. They have, I guess, would have implemented ICD-10 in Europe already. And we're kind of behind,
yeah,
aren't we?
We're a little behind. You know, I was actually thinking about that it might have been good for us to just skip ICD-10. We're going to get on ICD-10, and they're already gearing up now to go to ICD-11. So we are behind the rest of the developed world in some of these respects.
Well, that kind of happens. You can't be a leader in everything. It's a very complicated world. We'll have to have you come back in 1 year, give you the state of the art of healthcare IT in 2015, if you can imagine that. I'd like to thank you for coming in today. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Brian Ahair. He's the president of Advanced Health Information Exchange Resources. If you want to follow him on Twitter, at AHIER. If you want to read his blogs, you go to AHIER.net. I'm sure you click on the blog button and learn all kinds of different things. I was reading the blogs this morning. They're always very insightful.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and federalnewsradio.com.